Cue that fancy intro music. It's time to unleash your star power and own your dreams without selling your soul. It's time for some creative freedom. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and I'm a creative entrepreneur just like you. I'm also a business coach, helping people across the creative spectrum make great money doing what they love. If you're done with being the world's best kept secret and ready to shine like the star you are, creative freedom is for you. Let's get started. I've been holding on to this episode for a long time. Decades, in fact. And you may already know that I've been in the online space for nearly 30 years. I just said that out loud. Back when it took 15 minutes for an animated GIF to load, we were actually excited about that. That's how long I've been hanging out in the internet spaces. And I've seen the rise and the fall of many an internet marketing guru in my time, and the cult-like followings of the mythos that those gurus often created around themselves. And I mean, some people are still trying to do that today. In that time, I have learned a lot about what works and what doesn't, which is why I'm still here long after many of those folks have transitioned into other things or been arrested or simply just faded away. For a good part of my first few years as a coach, many of my clients would come to me after they'd already been burned by one of these so-called gurus. There used to be an old commercial about I fix $6 haircuts, so I would joke that I fix the six-figure year-long program problem. So many of these folks were wooed by a promise, the sizzle of making a big impact and the money that goes along with it, only to find out that there was more that they needed to do, more that they needed to invest in before they were really ready to step into a program like that. They thought, and rightly so in my opinion, that plunking down six figures to learn from somebody for a year should net some kind of a positive return on that investment, only to find that at the end of 12 months, they were often up to their eyeballs in credit card debt, no farther along on their entrepreneurial dreams, and now they were ready to throw in the towel and call it quits. And I don't want that for people. They were sold on a dream of success in their sleep with images of fancy cars and exotic locations. I'm not joking. There were pictures of dudes leaning against these, you know, high-end six-figure sports cars with a wad of cash fanned out in front of them. I mean, like, really, these were real legitimate pictures that people would use to sell their stuff. And it worked, unfortunately. They were told that the secret to a successful business was so simple, and if the guru could do it, so could they. Well, I think you know by now that's not entirely true. Their way of doing business was a cookie cutter formula or an online success blueprint. No joke, that was an actual product back in the day. You can probably still Google it. Those formulas and blueprints were often high-level overviews or outlines that didn't give you enough details to help you make real progress. They just kept you hamstrung and needing to invest more and more money with the guru in order to finally get the details that they'd been holding back from the beginning in their big six-figure, year-long, high-ticket, whatever, whatever program. There was this idea of share the what and not the how. That was a popular phrase, and it's still being bandied about in certain circles today. The logic being, well, if you show them exactly how to achieve something, then what do they need you for? You become obsolete. These gurus were turning themselves into crutches, or worse, cult leaders, where, and I quote, you get so much value just being in the room and in the presence of them. Like learning by osmosis is your ticket to big money breakthroughs. No thanks. Now let me be clear. Recipes work. You want to make a chocolate chip cookie? You get a good chocolate chip cookie recipe? You get a good chocolate chip cookie. So frameworks and blueprints and recipes and formulas, they have their place. Having a formula or a guide to follow is a great place to start. It helps you figure out the foundational elements of whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish. But you can't stop there. Like a blueprint for a real home, it's only part of the picture. Two people can have the exact same blueprint for a house and they can look completely different and function in different ways because of where that house is situated and how it's finished. I mean, maybe you're high up on a hill in Tillamook Head in the Pacific Northwest with ocean vistas, while somebody else is located in New Orleans below sea level. The same house in each of those places is going to be radically different, even if they are structurally identical. I'm watching the face of Nashville change right now as developers are coming in and tearing down these 2 and 3 bedroom single story ranch homes on these big lots and putting in a driveway and then putting in 2 or even as many as 7 tall skinnies on the same lot, packing them in like sardines 3 stories high. The neighborhoods that used to have their individual quirks are losing that charm because all the houses are starting to look the same or similar. But even homes with the same blueprint don't look identical. Okay, the siding and the trim are different. The interiors are styled differently. The landscaping might be a little different. The driveway might be on the other side of the building. And the people who live there are different. The biggest takeaway I want you to get from this episode is that as a creative entrepreneur, heck, as a human being, you have the liberty to build something that works for how you're wired to work, to do what serves you and works for you, so long as it's legal, okay? That's my caveat on that. I'm not endorsing stuff that's against the law here. But that still gives you a lot of leeway to build a business that really works for your unique situation, your context. Blueprints and cookie cutter concepts can only take you so far. Heck, we use them when we build business models, and we'll talk more about that later. We start with the same framework for every person that we work with, but like a good builder, we don't stop at the blueprint. That's the what. We also need the how. We take that model and help them see how to implement it in ways that work for them. And you can do that too. You can do business outside the box. So let's bust these four business myths so that you can feel at ease and start doing business your way. Here's myth number one. Your success isn't measured in 10K months. Now, whoever came up with this arbitrary number is the root of all evil. Okay, just kidding. Sort of. Whoever came up with this arbitrary income goal set a personal goal for themselves and turned it into a cookie cutter success metric. And I get it. 10K months are an easy set of handlebars to talk about. A six-figure year is a nice round number. It's easier than saying $8,333.33 a month. So let's just round it up to 10K months and call it good. Except that, even in rounding like that, do you see how you've arbitrarily moved the needle higher and higher? I mean, why stop there? Isn't seven figures the new six figures? Aren't we hearing about 100 million influencers now as they approach nine figures and some even nearing 10 figures? I mean, where does it stop? As a creative entrepreneur, you are anything but cookie cutter. Most success metrics that are being sold as the secret to true success are relative to the person that's selling that secret. And I've talked before about the six-figure distinction and how you need to decide for yourself what's really important and meaningful for you and your business goals. And I'll put a link to that blog post in the show notes. With my coaching clients, we assess what their business is, what their lifestyle is like, and then we determine what's feasible based on the resources available. If you've got more resources, it's true that you've usually got more options, but that doesn't mean that everyone else is screwed. Resources are more than just money. Relationships, time, energy, money, effort, attention, those are all resources potentially available to you. When you start to define what success looks like for you, your ROR, your return on resources, is an important consideration. Is that goal requiring you to put in more resources than you have? How much of your resources are required to achieve that goal, whether it's income related or not? Is it still feasible? Is it something that feels good and sustainable? If not, then let's adjust. And give yourself permission to feel good about achieving whatever income goal fits you. Give yourself permission to define that as success. One of the ways we do that with my clients is something called your enoughness number. In fact, that's the first page in this week's workbook. It's one part art and one part science. We look at how much money you need to live the lifestyle you really want. One that feels spacious and easy, not exorbitant or extravagant. And that's a personal definition, by the way. I don't need a boat, but maybe you do. I am not here to judge. I'm here to help you get real clarity. Because with the right amount of clarity, you can make more confident decisions and take courageous actions that move you closer and closer to your dreams. So we look at what you need to live your life and run your business in a state of enoughness. And then we add a 10% cushion because, hey, stuff happens. So what is that dollar amount? Well, that's your enoughness number. And if that number feels really out of reach, then we also create an interim enoughness number, which is a number between where you are now and your enoughness number that feels like a comfortable stretch rather than a formidable foe. And incidentally, you don't have to try and figure this out on your own. We've got a handy dandy downloadable in the Rising Tide Learning Library that's already waiting for you. Just pop over to creativefreedomshow.com, click on the Rising Tide link, and log in. If you're not already a member, it is free. So hop to it and then navigate yourself to season 7, episode 2, and you can walk yourself through finding your enoughness number before this episode is even over. once you have an enoughness number, you'll know, financially speaking, what you're driving towards. And again, if that feels like too much of a stretch, that's when an interim enoughness number becomes handy. That number between where you are right now and your current enoughness number that feels like a more reasonable stretch for you is something that's meaningful to drive towards that doesn't feel like it's grossly out of reach. Now, here's the other thing that's important, and I touched on a little earlier. You have to define success on your own terms. You can't run with somebody else's dream in your heart, or you'll never reach your destination. Instead, take a few minutes to use the pages in this week's guide to help you define what success looks like for you in each of the 5 key areas of success. If you're not sure what I mean by that, I'll post links to my book, The Secret Watch, a video on YouTube from my old Spotlight Sessions program about it, and you can get a deeper understanding if you just jump into the Dream Blazing training inside the Learning Library. The 5 key areas of success are what we use to help our clients set and attain meaningful goals. If you're not laying a course to your deepest dreams and desires, who will? So, myth number 1 is busted. You don't need some arbitrary dollar figure to be successful. Know your personal enoughness number, define success on your own terms, and let that guide you toward your dreams, desires, and more of what really matters to you. The second myth revolves around another adage you've probably heard a zillion times in the online world. Ask your audience what they want and then give it to them. Especially after that problematic book came out, which incidentally was a book selling his formula at High Ticket Coaching to support you to do just that. Don't ask me about the book. I did a video from a few seasons ago that talks about what's problematic about it, and I will link to Your Book Is Not a Business Card in the show notes if you're curious, but I refuse to give that joker any airtime. If you have an audience on any social media platform, then you are probably familiar with the basic instructions of the book. Ask your audience on social media or via email what they want to see from you. It's best practice to loop them in, and it makes them feel special and included. You might even try the famous question formula, what's your biggest struggle around X, in order to get more targeted answers. But there are 2 problems here. I've found that asking them usually leads to crickets unless you've already got a fairly large audience or you can bribe them to answer. Most people are too busy to bother with surveys or question campaigns like this, so you're getting a very small sample size from your audience. If you've only got a few thousand folks on your list, you probably won't get any meaningful feedback without bribing them with a prize or something. And then you'll most likely get the wrong people answering your questions because they just want the prize, and that's the second problem. People who are in it for the bribe may give you some very thoughtful answers, but squeaky wheels are more often tire kickers and trick-or-treaters than they are legitimate potential buyers. So you've shot yourself in the foot trying to create something for someone that won't probably buy from you anyway. Either way, the main issue with this myth is that you actually don't and probably shouldn't create everything your audience needs, especially as a creative entrepreneur. If you're an artist or a musician or another creative that is expressing themselves through your creative output, asking your audience what they want you to create is akin to waking up in the morning and asking them how you are feeling today and what you should have for breakfast. Now, can you take requests? Sure. But here's where you take a cue from the guy at the piano bar. The biggest tipper has a better chance of getting their song played first. Now, can surveys be helpful? Sure. If they are targeted and strategic, not just a blanket email to your entire list or a shout out to all the randos on your social media. You end up filtering through a lot more noise that way if you get anything at all. Instead, focus on people who have already paid you. What are they into right now? Where are they feeling like their next step should be? Can you help them take that step? Okay, cool. If not, then don't try to be all things to all people. Be your audience's hero and point them in the direction of someone who already does what they need. Spreading yourself too thin and creating things that don't serve you or are not your passion will not move the needle for you. It will only serve to keep you on the hamster wheel of constant creation and probably creating for crickets. Instead, learn and perfect your skills and focus on growing the vision of your business. Now, I'm also not saying that you can't, in fact, build a suite of products or a body of work that serves your audience in multiple ways. Of course you can, especially if it's your strength and something that you actually want to do. Just keep in mind the amount of resources, time, money, effort, attention, that will be required to do it, and then ask yourself, is it worth it? It's okay for the answer to be no. Stay true to yourself and let your audience be a guide, but not the ruler of your work. See, I told you, This stuff is nuanced. There is no one right answer. There is no one cookie cutter thing. And it's also important here for me to remind you of Thomas Edison's biggest flop, to remind you that creating in a vacuum isn't ideal either. His ore extraction machine concept was, in his mind, the greatest invention that he'd ever developed, but nobody wanted it. The problem wasn't that he had this great idea and started working on it. It was that instead of listening to the people closest to him that told him that no one wanted to buy it, he kept charging ahead and practically ruined his legacy and took the company down with him. When potential buyers are telling you no thanks, and you're doing this work to make an income, then it's important to take that feedback into account. That doesn't mean you're going to change everything, but it's important to hear that and make decisions based on that. On the other hand, if you're not creating out of a drive for income, but maybe to push your creative limits or just try something new, then don't worry about the negative Nellies. You're not trying to sell this thing anyways. Go ahead and experiment. Have at it. Have some fun. Do something different. Woo, be wild and crazy. So you've got to keep some perspective if you want to bust myth number two. You can't just ask anyone what they want. They may or may not tell you, and what they tell you may not be worth a darn. On the other hand, if you're building something to sell, get feedback from people who are likely to buy it. Don't let their feedback run the show, but take it into account as you create the thing that your heart wants to deliver to serve them. Okay, this next one is primarily for online folks, but it's important. Myth number three. Create a course so that you can stop trading time for money. Now, never mind the fact that it still takes time to create the course in the first place. The general sentiment, especially in the online business world, is that creating any form of digital product or course that can have you stop trading time for money is the goal and the key for real business success. Well, I call bullcrap. I'm gonna tell it like it is. No matter what you do, you are trading your resources for other resources. That should be no surprise, folks. Sometimes you'll be trading time for money. Other times you'll be trading money for time. Sometimes you'll be trading on your relationships or your brand equity or your attention. There's always an exchange of resources happening that is inevitable. So the idea of passive income in and of itself is flawed. Income is never passive. From making the thing to marketing, content creation, all the ongoing activities that help you stay top of mind. Look, even the oldest company in the world, Kongo Gumi, which has been around for over 1,400 years, still does marketing to keep people aware of who they are and what they do. Can you imagine marketing for over 1,400 years? It never ends. As a business owner, you don't sit back and collect a check. Even when you've got perfectly efficient systems and processes or team members that have taken so much workload off your plate. The reality is that as a CEO or a business owner or a creative entrepreneur, you're going to be working towards your business goals. And the products or body of work that you're creating need to support the legacy that you want your vision to fulfill. So can you build a course or digital product that can enhance your income? Sure. But that's not always a good idea for every entrepreneur, let alone every creative entrepreneur. Some of us just don't want to teach. Or some of us are lousy teachers. Let's call that one out right now. Instructional design is important. I have taken a lot of crappy online courses over the years that had great information, but were lousy courses. They were presented out of order. They didn't make sense. I ended up with more questions than I would have if they just talked to someone to help them build this thing right in the first place. Oh, I know all these things. I'll just plop them all together in an ebook or put them in Kajabi in some online learning course program. That's great. But if it's not in the right order, people don't learn how to do things and then they have more questions. Creating a course that doesn't sell or one that sells and results in a bunch of refunds and complaints doesn't actually make your life better. It makes everyone's life worse. Everyone's going around saying, well, there's 6 weeks of my life I'll never get back. Not to mention my money, and your reputation's in the toilet. Instead, we take a different approach to building a business model that works for how you're wired to work. Creative freedom business model design starts with who you are and what really matters to you. Then we look to understand why those things matter, why you do what you do, and not the I want my kids to go to college kind of why. I'm looking at the deeper why, your essential why. Why does this work matter? Why does your world or the world need what you're doing? Why you of all people? Why this? I mean, you can be up to anything. Why did you choose this path? Those are the two core drivers of our business model design. because those are the things that don't change a whole lot in the life of a creative entrepreneur unless acted on by a major outside force. Now, the other stuff, who you're here to serve, what you're going to offer them, and how you're going to deliver it, that stuff changes pretty regularly. When I started coaching 20 years ago, thereabouts, I worked almost exclusively with direct sellers, and I billed myself as a direct sales marketing coach, but that's not who I serve anymore. I still have some direct sellers in my world, but I work with creative entrepreneurs who know they're meant for something bigger and are tired of being the best kept secret, and they're ready to be the celebrity in their niche, or they want to be, and they're working on it, but they've hit some kind of an invisible force field that's keeping them stuck. That's my who right now. And what I offer has changed many times over the years. Those of you that have been with me from the beginning probably remember the early teleclasses. On the phone. I haven't done a teleclass and I don't even know how long, because that's not what works for me and my audience anymore. And that's the key, finding the nexus point between what works for you and what works for your audience. So there are a few worksheets from my last business model workshop in this week's downloadable as well. You're getting a smattering of tools to help you bust through all these myths this week. And this one is probably, next to the enoughness number, one of the most clarifying. Clarity begets confidence, which begets courage. When you have the clarity, you can make more confident decisions, which helps you take more courageous action. And here's the thing. Who I am and why I do what I do hasn't changed a whole lot in all those years. The way I talk about it has, and that's why I attract a different audience now. But I'm still me, an older, wiser, more mature yet playful version of myself, I'd like to think, but still Lisa. I didn't have to try to be somebody I'm not in order to come this far in my career, and neither do you. Remember, you have permission to do business however you'd like. If you prefer to serve people one-on-one, then that's your business. Do business your way. Consider your business your personal Burger King. You can, in fact, have it your way. I mean, again, so long as it's legal. So, that's third myth busted, right? Here's the fourth myth. You gotta stand your hustle and grind. Woo! This is my least favorite myth of them all. Now, to be clear, I'm not anti-hustle. I'm anti-hamster wheel of hustle. I believe in compassionate hustle, meaning there's a time and a place to give it all you got, leave nothing out, and maybe stretch yourself a little to achieve something meaningful to you, to hit a deadline or whatever. Maybe work a little longer, maybe put in a little more extra effort, go above and beyond or whatever. But that's not sustainable. You can't do that all the time. That's bonus time, right? That's compassionate hustle. There's this video of a Will Smith interview somewhere on the interwebs where he says something like, he's the hardest working person in the room, and if we get on a treadmill, one of two things is going to happen. You'll get off first or I'm going to die. Well, that's not a hill I want to die on, Mr. Smith. I can be competitive, but only when it comes to things that really matter to me. Competition for the sake of winning doesn't inspire me. Competition to win something that matters? Well, that's what inspires me to be competitive in the first place. Otherwise, why am I wasting my time trying to outrun Will Smith? Stay in your lane. Do the things that matter most to you and give them your very best. And recognize your best will vary from day to day. Like this podcast episode, I don't even know how many takes we've gotten through this time because I just keep flubbing up because today is a different kind of day for me. Energetically, I'm a little bit all over the map. And my commitment was to get this done and it's still within the realm of possibility for me to do it. So I'm doing it. That's what I build my entire coaching business around. To be successful, you don't have to hustle and be glued to a hamster wheel all the time. Hell, even the hamster gets off the wheel, and you can too. To be successful, you have to first define success your way. Aspiring to somebody else's definition of success will only leave you wanting and feeling like you've never hit the mark. Consider your lifestyle, your limitations, your strengths, the amount of resources you have to invest. It is okay to sleep and eat and rest and enjoy your weekends. You don't need to sacrifice having a life in order to be successful. There's very rarely a need to lose sleep. As a client of mine once reminded me, there are no graphic design emergencies. No one is going to die. Now that isn't to say that there won't be times when more work hours than normal are required, but that's exactly the thing. Normal has to be defined without the hustle. And I'm a big supporter of doing business sustainably. You guys hear me say that all the time. This should be the norm for our creative businesses. Compassionate hustle when it's needed, but it should be the exception, not the rule. And as creative entrepreneurs, well, as human beings in general, hustle is relative. and it's totally dependent on the resources that we have available to invest. What looks overwhelming and too demanding for me may be just right for somebody else, and vice versa. Sustainability is our key to success. Give yourself the runway that you need and set your realistic expectations based on your capacity or the capacity that you can borrow from others. Set the goal and give yourself compassion. Remember to ask for help when you need it. As a fusion creative, it can be hard for me to ask for help sometimes. We're supposed to be good at everything or a lot of things, and sometimes it really is faster if I just do it myself, but then that leaves me doing all the things, which isn't sustainable. That's why I know I need to be asking for help. How could one of my team members take over any portion of my work? What specific recurring tasks can we systemize? Like making social media images for each of the podcast episodes. And I'll tell you right now, we're going through some team changes here in Creative Freedom HQ. And, you know, it's got me going, biting my nails and grabbing at the desk because I've empowered people to do work for me. And now we have to train new people and we've got deadlines. And I'm like, I'm going to have to pick all this stuff back up and run with it. And I'm like, no, Lisa, no, that's not your job. You don't get to pick that stuff up again. Just let it go. The team will handle it. It will be fine, right? We will get there. There are no graphic design. There are no business coaching emergencies. This too shall pass and you will be okay. And I'm still learning this too. Lewis Schiff, the author of the book Business Brilliant, spoke at a mastermind event that I attended once. And he said, you need to starve the business of yourself. And to a degree, I get his point. You can't be doing all the things, right? So I can receive that. But as a creative, we're almost always going to have our hands in things at least a little bit, right? Tweaking this thing, approving that thing, managing that thing, putting our creative stamp or thumbprint on things. Like that's because we're the artists. Like the business is built around us to some degree. So we can't completely extract ourselves from the business. At least I don't believe you can until you're ready to hit an exit strategy point. So it's important that we're focused on the things that matter most. And that means empowering and trusting your team to get the other important aspects of your business done without you involved. Beyonce isn't doing all the tour planning. She's got people for that. Her job is to focus on being the best Beyonce that she can be, from practicing her music and her moves, to taking care of her health and her safety, to being the best parent and partner that she can be. She's empowered her people to give her the space and freedom to do that. So for me and my business, that looks like trusting my team to do the pieces of the work that aren't my zone of genius so that I can show up and do these podcast episodes and not worry about, is the social media thing going to get done? Is the downloadable going to get done? Like, are they going to look okay? Like, I don't have to worry about any of that. I have a team now that can run with it. We've got some training stuff to do and I trust they're going to make it work. You can't hustle all the time or you'll end up dying on that treadmill. And life is too short and too precious for that. So if you've been operating under the assumptions of one of these four myths, take a deep breath and let it out because this is your sigh of relief. Whew, you have a lot more power and control here than you might think. Give yourself the compassion and permission you need to define success in the best way that is realistic and sustainable for you. Forget about everybody else. Focus on you. And then go for it. Play full out. Hold nothing back and do what matters most to you. Now, if you need help doing that, we're here to help. From our Pay for Results Business Incubator to our full-day Star Power Intensives, we help you find and clear the blocks to a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love. And I know this is corny, the impact, income, and freedom to enjoy it. But it's true. We give you the what and the how. How's that? Join me next time, where we take a closer look at imposter syndrome. More specifically, is it really imposter syndrome you're feeling, or is it something else? And we're going to talk about what that something else might be. Be sure you're subscribed to get notified, hit the bell, kiss your mama, leave a review, whatever else the youngins are doing right now, so that you'll know about our upcoming episodes. And I sure hope we'll see you there. Until then, for more inspiration and education to help you unleash your star power and own your dreams without selling your soul, come see What's Shaken over at creativefreedomshow.com. You know you want to.